This episode of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine was made possible by contributions from slaves like you. Spanky very much.
This is the tracks of an armored personnel carrier that have just been broken off. There's a whole column of military vehicles here that have simply been abandoned. That's how fierce the fighting was and how quickly the soldiers had to retreat. This is an extraordinary sight. In the historic old part of Bangkok, the capital city of Thailand, clashes Thai on Thai. And this was the result. The security forces beating a retreat, leaving their equipment behind.
It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine, where sticks and stones will break your bones. I'm your host, The Stimulator, and I bet y'all never thought you'd see images like these. Yep, that indeed is a massive line of riot pigs that is running away from the motherfucking Kyrgyz resistance, who this month overthrew the government and chased the president out of the country and into Kazakhstan.
It's nice!
Apparently President Bekiev is a holdover from the commie era, and who, after consolidating power, pushed around independent journalists and jailed members of the opposition. Bekiev was able to get away with this bullshit because he acted as a shit sherpa for the motherfucking United Snakes. You see, when you allow the empire to rock a military base on your land so that Obama can keep killing the brown man in Afghanistan, well, you can get away with murder. But the Kyrgyz have shown us that it is possible to knock down the dickwads up top.
Go!
Fucking awesome.
I joined the red shirts because I want to be part of the people power that returns this country to the real people.
Another powerful example of David versus Goliath is the motherfucking Thai resistance, aka the red shirt movement. The red shirts are made up of mostly rural farmers who are sick and tired of being ignored by the pubic enemas who run the Southeast Asian country. The Prime Minister has refused to negotiate with the Red Shirts, so they decided to negotiate with his vehicle instead. The battle for Bangkok is not over, but we'll keep you updated to any new developments. In Bolivia, leaders from the Global South took part in a people's conference on climate change. Here's Bolivian President Evo Morales on the opening day.
We have two paths, either Pachamama or death. We have two paths. Either capitalism dies or Mother Earth dies. Either capitalism lives or Mother Earth lives. Of course, brothers and sisters, we are here for life, for humanity, and for the rights of Mother Earth.
Evo is correct. If we want to have a planet to gangsta chill on, we need to slay capitalism. But, like most things that seem too good to be true, El Señor Morales has his own contradictions to contend with. The indigenous president is betting his country's future on oil and gas extraction, mining, dams, and even building coal-fired power plants. Hardly a green-friendly strategy if you ask me. To make matters worse for him, while the climate summit was kicking off, indigenous peeps in the south of Bolivia shut down a mine run by the
Sumitomo Corporation.
Sumitomo Shoji no Kato desu.
The mission of the Sumitomo Corporation is to achieve prosperity and realize dreams through sound business activities.
Well, domo arigato, motherfucker. Apparently, in order to extract minerals, the Sumitomo-run mine sucks about 600 liters of water every single motherfucking minute, and the protesters want that water back. A similarly fucked up situation is going down in BC, where the crotch-burning crack tokers from Taseko Mines want to drain the beautiful Fish Lake so that they can fill it with mining waste. Well, as expected, the industry suck-ups who run the province of British Columbia have approved the mining project. Here's Taseko Mines rat bastard in charge, Russell Halbauer, explaining why he expects the Canadian federal government to approve the mine as well.
Because the federal process and the provincial process are essentially identical. So we have made 103 commitments to environmental protection, and we believe those will be replicated and harmonized with the federal process. So we see no reason why there will be any stumbling blocks with respect to the the feds approving this. So we will move forward with whatever we can to accelerate the build out of this of the mine.
But according to local residents, the environment will not be protected, and the fish for which the lake is named after could be endangered. Here's former Chief Roger Williams.
Well, we do have a big concern because you put a mine here, and I know, I can guarantee there will be damage. And if that damage leaks, we do know that you're looking at the different lands below Fish Lake going towards the Seco River.
For those of you in Vancouver who are outraged at this destructive act, Taseka Mines is conveniently located in the heart of downtown, just blocks away from public transit. Slap him up and shake him up and then you know. Set him up to float and bait him with the dough. You can do it funk or do it disco. Yeah, disco. Find me ways to get a CEO. Slap him up and shake him up and then you know. Set him up to float and bait him with the dough. You can do it funk or do it disco. Yeah, disco. I'm just about it, it was worth you waiting. On the turf debating how to get it percolating. He working you while we happy just to work a day. But I'ma slap him till my blood starts circulating. Your checks have elasticity. Did they cut off your electricity? Did you scream and yell explicitly? Force the boss into complicity. I'm a white chalk stencil, but I push a pencil. Rolling dope fiend rentals to your residential. Focus fuck eating lentils with no utensils. Finna teach pimp class with a whole credential. They own sweatshops, pet cops, and filter cola. Murder babies with their molars on the areola. Control the Pope, Dalai Lama, Holy Rollers, and the Ayatollah. Bump this rolling in your bunker or your new Corolla. As I have reported on numerous occasions on this motherfucking show, indigenous folks everywhere are engaged in acts of resistance against capitalism, occupation, cultural genocide, and environmental destruction. But these acts of rebellion by the original inhabitants of Turtle Island are not new, and date back from the very early days of the first European invaders. To find out more about this rich history, I spoke with Gord Hill, author of 500 Years of Indigenous Resistance. Hey Gord, how the fuck are you?
I'm doing good.
So, 500 Years of Indigenous Resistance, just what the fuck do you mean?
Well, 500 Years of Indigenous Resistance is basically a history of Indigenous resistance against European colonialization here in the Americas. And, I mean, one of the purposes of it was so that Indigenous peoples could have a better understanding of that history to counter the colonial history that we're taught in schools and through, pop culture, corporate culture, and to counter this image or this myth that Indigenous peoples were simply overwhelmed and crushed by European civilization, or that they welcomed it and were these, equal partners in this process of the merging of these cultures.
And what was the first instance of natives giving the finger to the white man?
The first recorded, documented resistance was by the Taino. When Columbus left the Dominican Republic, Haiti, which he called Hispaniola, he left a detachment of Spanish conquistadors on the island, and they were instructed to construct a fort and to begin taxing the local population and setting up for the return of Columbus with a much larger force, which he did a couple years later. Well, when he returned, he found that the detachment that he'd left had been killed, and the fort that they had constructed had been burned down because the Taino had retaliated against the aggression carried out by the conquistadors.
So you also took this text and made it into a graphic novel called The 500 Years of Resistance Comic Book. What the fuck?
Yeah, The 500 Years of Resistance Comic Book is basically retelling the story of the 500 Years of Resistance, which the text... tells, but yeah, it just takes it and puts it into a comic book format, which is much more accessible to children, youth, and people who have just generally a hard time sitting down reading a book.
What is your favorite recent example of natives battling it out with settlers?
Well, I think one of the most important examples of current Indigenous resistance was the Oka Crisis of 1990. The Mohawks of Ganasitagi, a small territory reserve near the township of Oka, We're resisting the expansion of a golf course and a condominium setup that was going to infringe on some of the last remaining pines, wooded area that they used for their ceremonies, lacrosse, and part of their graveyard was contained in this area. So in 1989-1990, they started campaigning to stop this. They organized protests. They had petitions. They went to city council in Oka to try to stop this expansion, and the city was just arrogant and just would not listen to the people. They began a blockade of a small dirt road in the pines in Ganasatagi, and they maintained this this little blockade for a few months. The township of Oka tried to get a court injunction to order its removal, and on July 11th, the Quebec Provincial Police sent in a large, heavily armed force of tactical officers armed with M16s and tear gas and that, and they went to dismantle this peaceful blockade. But by that time, warriors had rallied to the defense of this blockade and this struggle to protect the pines, and so behind the protesters, there were armed warriors. And when the police came in shooting tear gas, the warriors engaged them in a short firefight, and one of the police officers was shot and killed. After this shootout, the Quebec police retreated. They abandoned most of their vehicles, and this began a 77-day armed siege of the Mohawk community in Ganasatagi. That same morning, Mohawks in Ganawagi seized the Mercier Bridge, also with arms. They seized the Mercier Bridge to place, as an act of solidarity, but also to place pressure on the Quebec government, because the Mercier Bridge was a vital commuter link into Montreal from the suburbs. And, I mean, 100,000 people a day were using this bridge to get to work and to do their business in the city and that. This siege began. There was thousands of police deployed. Eventually, after a few, 2 or 3 weeks, the Canadian Armed Forces were deployed. They deployed an entire brigade of 4,500 troops, complete with armored units, armored personnel carriers, tanks, helicopters, jets, artillery units, and naval forces as well, to contain these two communities of Ganasatagi and Ganawagi. And there was mass rioting by the white Quebecois Chateauguay, residents of Chateauguay, a nearby town, demanding that the military go in and crush this uprising. So it really inflamed a lot of the local racial tensions. Across the country, there was a widespread solidarity movement that arose to defend the Mohawks and to... there was protests all across the country, occupations of government offices, occupations and shutting down of bridges, railway lines. There was sabotage, electrical pylons were downed, bridges were burned. So the government of Canada was facing an insurgency that was arising from this standoff. And this was the main contributing factor, of course, that limited the military violence by the government. And the 77-day siege ended when the armed Mohawks burned their weapons and walked out of the final area that they had been contained in. But they refused to surrender, and they got into clashes with the military and the police as they tried to enter this area. But that was the ending of the 77-day siege. Something like 30 or 40 of these people were later acquitted on the grounds of self-defense in court. And the golf course and the condominium project were never expanded. So the Mohawks were victorious. And not only were they victorious in their local struggle, but they helped inspire Indigenous resistance and set the tone for Indigenous resistance throughout the rest of the decade of the 1990s and even up to this day.
Thanks, Gord. And that about does it for this edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine. Muchas gracias to all my compañeros who gave me some dinero so that I can continue running my filthy fucking mouth. Paul, Gordon, Michael, Margaret, Laura, Ryan, Stephen, Jeremy, Brandon, David, Sanford, Cynthia, Noah, Dan, Mike, Rodney, Peter, Casey, and Sakura. Humflower. For links to Indigenous resistance or to comment on this show, just visit my fucking website, Stimulator, Sumitomo.tv. Now go out and visit some CEOs.
Remember, kids, you can podcast high-quality video of this show at submedia.tv.